Hey, this is Max from the Arkells, and you're listening to Underground Sports Philadelphia.
What is going on, everybody? Welcome into episode number 623 of Underground Sports Philadelphia, presented by the City of Vineland. It's KB coming at you from Underground Studios, and joining me is one of our merchants of madness, Mr. Stephen McAvoy.
How are we doing?
Living the dream, one nightmare at a time, just like everybody is with their brackets. We'll get into the madness. We're going to talk some fills, some big stuff went down. As we record this on Sunday, went down this morning, roster-wise, and some more clarity on the opening day roster, and maybe potentially a spot for Jordan Montgomery in this rotation. We'll talk some Eagles quarterback factory. We'll obviously talk some March Madness, and we will also talk about the Flyers as they get a big-time win over the Boston Bruins on Saturday. Fall to the Florida Panthers at home today. But they're still in the driver's seat to make the playoffs. But before we get into everything, make sure you're following us on the socials at Underground PHI, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Threads, Facebook.com/UndergroundSportsPHI, Twitch.tv/UndergroundSportsPHI. You can follow me on Twitter at KBIZZL311 and on Instagram and Threads at KBIZZLE11. Follow Steve on Twitter and Instagram at RealSteveMcAvoy. Subscribe to the podcast feed, Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts in audio form. Leave a 5-star rating and review. It goes a long way for helping this show continue to grow, helps more people find Underground Sports Philadelphia and our entire catalog of podcasts wherever you consume them in audio form. Steve, right now, this show in particular on the U.S. sports podcast charts, we're inching ever so close to breaking into the top 1,000.
Jeez, pretty fire.
Let's go.
Pretty damn fire.
And a nice little update for you. Getting the Hull still dominating in Sweden. In the top 250 in Sweden.
It's those Ludvig fans can't get enough of us.
Ludvig Åberg fans love getting the Hull.
It also helps that Ben, like, low-key looks like he could be Swedish. So it's kind of
That's true. He's just missing the blonde.
he's a dirty blonde.
He needs to put some sun in down there in Florida.
Bleach it.
Subscribe to the pod on audio platforms, leave a 5-star review, and of course subscribe to the Underground Sports Philadelphia YouTube channel, youtube.com/@UndergroundSportsPhiladelphia. That's where you get full video episodes of this show twice a week, full video episodes of every show on our network, clips, shorts, live streams. We've been doing some live streams for March Madness that have been absolute doozies of a time. Definitely go check those out. We're at 750 subscribers right now. We've lost a couple. Don't know why. How you doing? Come on back. But we need 250 to get to 1,000, and then we can really start cooking with gas on the YouTube channel in terms of having all of the amenities opened up for us. So be a friend, tell a friend, smash that like button, ring the bell icon, leave a comment down below on your thoughts about everything that Steve and I touch on this episode, and be sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/@UndergroundSportsPhiladelphia. And of course, this show is presented by the City of Vineland, and the City of Vineland Municipal Calendar features city organized, city sponsored, and city affiliated events that are of public interest. The calendar, which is accessible at vinelandcity.org, is a good way for residents and visitors to build awareness, remain engaged with city government, and participate in local events. You can also follow the City of Vineland on social media via their Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube pages. Through these tools, you can stay connected to the community and get important announcements about programs and services offered by the city. Vineland, New Jersey, where it's always growing season. And of course, big thank you to Security 21 Security Systems and Paul J. Gillespie Incorporated for their continued support of this podcast. Steve, the Fightins We're talking about the Fightins.
Oh, God.
It is brought to you by our awesome merch partners at PHI Apparel Company, the best merch in the game, from shirts and hoodies and everything in between for your Philly sports fan. That's whether it's yourself, your friends, your family. And they've got Underground Sports Philadelphia podcast merch. All of our franchises have merch. Go check out everything they have to offer, from the Eagles, the Phillies, the Flyers, the Sixers, the Union, and of course your favorite shows on this network. Go to phiapparel.co so you can stand out in the crowd. Fill up your cart with everything you want to get. And when you go to check out, use code UNDERGROUND for 10% off your merch orders. It is the most effective and direct way to support everything we're doing here at Underground Sports Philadelphia. So go get your merch, phiapparel.co, code UNDERGROUND, 10% off your orders. And when you get your orders, tweet them at us, post it on Instagram. We'll repost it. We'll share it everywhere. So go get your merch and be styling and profiling. Head into the spring season and all year round with PHI Apparel Company. Some big moves that the Fightin Phils made today, Steve. They have extended relief pitcher Matt Strom through 2025 with an option for 2026. I love this move. I think Matt Strom is a core part of this bullpen. 2023 was his first year with the team. He kind of worked as a hybrid starter and reliever. To begin the season, he was in the rotation and held it down. He went 9-5 with two saves, a 3.29 ERA, with almost 90 innings pitched, career high 56 appearances. He made 10 starts, had a 30.8% strikeout rate last season, which was his highest mark since 2016, and a 5.42 strikeout to walk ratio in relief, which ranks second among all National League relievers last season. And he made 7 scoreless appearances for the Phillies in the postseason last year, including the division series clinching win against the Atlanta Braves on October 12th. I love Matt Strom. He is all-time vibes guy, perfect bullpen pitcher for a blue-collar city like Philadelphia. And he's just so fun. And I'm very happy the Phillies are investing in the good parts of this bullpen for the long term.
You know, I think, first of all, great signing. If they weren't going to bring back Lorenzen, it most certainly would behoove you to bring back someone who played as well this past year as Matt Strom, who also, like we forget, had a good enough career when he played for Kansas City, but didn't necessarily have the eye-popping numbers you can call this past year his breakout, quote-unquote. And to be able to kind of anchor this bullpen alongside Jose Alvarado, Anthony Dominguez as well. The biggest question mark, though, and I know we'll talk more about this, but the idea that there's still one free agent pitcher who's on the market and everyone's like, oh, where's he going to go? I don't think it's worth the Phillies' time to be looking into that as opposed to continuing to build the bullpen. I think it's the only part of this team that might hurt them down the stretch, and I think that they have depth, they have length. Gregory Soto is a strong name. Jeff Hoffman was once a top prospect that
had a great year last year.
Who had a great year, and coming up with the Padres years ago was supposed to be a starting pitcher, has figured himself out as a reliever. And again, there are other names in there, but when you look top to bottom, especially after getting Whit Merrifield, there's no holes in this offense. It's one of the best, probably arguably the best lineup in baseball, even with the loss of Rhys Hoskins. And then on top of that, the starting rotation, is it worth it to get a guy like a Jordan Montgomery, who I understand with as each passing day goes on, his contract valuation is depreciating like a bad car. But is it worth it when you could rather invest the money in someone like, say, Brad Hand, who was still, despite 36 years old and older and hasn't necessarily played his best baseball in the last couple of years, still a serviceable reliever if you can put him in strong situations, or even like someone who I thought was going to be really good, again, top prospect who fell off, Alex Reyes, who's only 29 years old and is probably the last guy that you would think about getting, who through 69 games when he last played in 2021 has had a couple of really bad injuries, could be a reclamation project. But again, why spend the money on Jordan Montgomery when you can just continue to build the bullpen, which is the only thing that you need to do more and more and more? And while, yes, the names there aren't great, Alex Colomé is another one that comes to mind, haven't pitched in a long time, if you're not looking towards the farm system, you might as well look somewhere else. And I don't think focusing on someone like Montgomery to fill the rotation spot that might be open isn't worth their while.
Well, I think the fun part of this is you bring up the bullpen being a potential thing that could hurt the Phillies. I don't know if you saw MLB's post. According to Fangraph's war calculations this year, the Phillies have the top bullpen in Major League Baseball.
What? I don't believe anything the MLB puts out, considering they put Brandon Nimmo as like the sixth-ranked center fielder in baseball.
I love there's a fan account that is dedicated to Scott Fransky and Larry Anderson, the Phillies radio broadcast crew, and they tweeted, "You either live long enough to become the hero or you die looking at the Phillies being the number one ranked bullpen in baseball."
Yeah, well, like even here, right? And this happy dead. The MLB, actually, this was Bleacher Report. But regardless, all of these sites, I'm pretty sure it's all just freaking clickbait. Bleacher Report put out their 2024 top 10 third basemen. And it goes in order. And it gets more comical as it goes. Jose Ramirez, Austin Riley, Gunnar Henderson. Now, Gunnar Henderson being the third-ranked third baseman above Rafael Devers, Manny Machado, Nolan Arenado, Matt Chapman. What? Are you kidding me?
I hate putting him in front of Arenado, because Arenado has gotten like this grandfathered in like stud moniker. Granted, rightfully so, but he has fallen off a lot the past couple of years.
Now, let me also put this in here. Bleacher Report put the Phillies as the fifth ranked bullpen in baseball.
Hell yeah.
No,
I'm all in on a Phillies bullpen breakout and proving everyone wrong.
Ugh, I just don't buy it with the
addition by subtraction. They got rid of Craig Kimbrell and it made the bullpen better,
which seems to almost make no sense. But hey, you know what? I mean, I've been more wrong on more things than I am right.
Of course, that clown develops a curveball during this spring training and couldn't throw that in games 4 and 5 against the Diamondbacks. But what do I know?
I am the guy who said that that New Mexico would make the Final Four, and look at how that one ended up.
I do have one more thing before we talk more about Jordan Montgomery and the match for the Phillies. Our long national nightmare is over, Phillies fans. The Phillies also today traded Jake Cave to the Colorado Rockies in exchange for cash considerations. 38 plate appearances this spring. Cave slash 324, 342, 405 with a 747 OPS. You're selling high, baby. Smart move, Big Dave. Jake Cave, he's fine. He's like a quadruple A player.
JK was an all-time Lehigh Valley Iron pick. Watch
all time. And I mean, he's older. It opens up a spot more solidified for Christian Pache and Johan Rojas to be in the outfield. I do think the Phillies are going to add another outfield bat before camp breaks and everything, because as of right now, they're going into the season with Johan Rojas, Christian Pache, Brandon Marsh in the outfield. And Nick Castellanos as well, but they only have one left-handed bat off the bench, and it's Garrett Stubbs.
Yikes.
They can navigate that for the time being, but I do feel like they'll add another left-handed bat before the season starts. Mm-hmm. So that's something to take into account, but sayonara, Jake Cave. The other thing why I think Jordan Montgomery makes sense even more so now than it did even, say, a week and a half ago, Taiwan Walker starting the season on the injured list. So you're down a starting pitcher. You're going into the season starting Zach Wheeler, Aaron Nola, Ranger Suarez, dominant top three. Christopher Sanchez will be your number four. And then Spencer Turnbull is going to be the number five for the Phillies to start the season.
Let me put it this way, right? And I understand the deep-pocketed Phillies could afford Jordan Montgomery. First of all, I don't think Jordan Montgomery fits in Philadelphia as much as he would in a Chicago or Boston's probably the number one place for him to go, if I'm being totally honest with you. But when it comes to Jordan Montgomery, and again, like I said, the money is devaluing every single day. You don't know how much he's been training. The Mets just signed JD Martinez. We're a week before spring training. He's going to spend 2.5 weeks in AAA to get retuned.
Lorenzen just signed with the Rangers for 1 year, $4.5 million.
Exactly. Like, we have guys who, this isn't a lockout. Like, we're not dealing with a situation where, like, guys have been sitting around training and getting ready for the day they get the call and say, hey, baseball's being played. No, this is like Jordan Montgomery has been waiting it out and riding the coattails of Scott Boras, who I have a total gripe to have with Scott Boras. The fact that Jordan Montgomery wanted to beat Aaron Nola's salary expectations going into this year, make $30 million a year. An article by Bleacher Report like 2 months ago evaluated both Montgomery and Snell's salaries to be excess of $30 million a year. We just saw that Blake Snell is only making what, $15 million, I think, with a player option next year. Scott Boras is ruining his clients actively, and it's not a very good thing. Matt Chapman also signed for, I believe, a third less from what his projected valuation was.
So did Cody Bellinger.
Cody Bellinger as well. Like, we're looking at a situation where we have three guys who are all basically playing prove-it years when they've all most certainly proven it. Blake Snell won the Cy Young, and granted, I don't think Blake Snell is as good a pitcher as people make him out to be anyways, but I digress on that. Jordan Montgomery is probably going to make in the ballpark of roughly what Blake Snell is going to make right now in San Francisco, $14 million. That's a great value for a one-year deal, which I will totally give the Phillies that. But again, with the amount of time that Taiwan Walker is going to be on the aisle, the Phillies are in a very similar situation to the Yankees, where the Yankees don't necessarily have the greatest pitching staff in the world, but their offense is going to give them six runs a night. Early on in the year, it doesn't matter how well you perform in those instances, because what matters is by August, September, October, can you win those tight games? In the early part of the year, the Phillies can find themselves 20-5, 20-6 after the first month of the year by scoring seven runs a game and giving up five. Like, that's a very real possibility. The Yankees, again, as your comparative here, without Carlos Rodon, without Frankie Montas, without Severino, and with a banged-up Domingo Germán, who's also dealing with a suspension, finished the first month of the year 15 games over 500. They averaged nine runs a game for a two-week period when they had no active pitchers, and their best pitcher that wasn't named Gerrit Cole, they were trotting out Johnny Brito. Like, it's more than possible that you can survive 2 to 3 months without Taiwan Walker and work your way around and still be 15 games over. Also, you're not fighting in a challenging division. The Marlins are really your only fight for second place. I do think the Braves are just they're just loaded. The Braves are adding pieces that at this point, like, they might as well be the Saudi Arabian PIF and just throwing money at every little thing on fucking earth, because they have endless funds that just kind of go everywhere. And for some reason, all their guys enjoy being underpaid. I don't know what it is about being in Atlanta. I've been there. Not a very fun place to be.
Well, I've said we need to do an active investigation into what the quote-unquote Atlanta Braves Foundation is, because every single press release that the Braves put out, every player is giving at least 1% of their contract back to this Atlanta Braves Foundation. And I genuinely think it's just a secret laboratory that birthed Blooper, and there's some nefarious doings going on with the Atlanta Braves Foundation.
I want to know the Nepo baby is being created in this factory that's going to wind up being on this team in 35 years. Ronald Acuna's genetically mutated child that's going to smash 37 home runs a year and drive in 400 runs is being manufactured in this foundational facility, probably contained at Augusta National Golf Club, because no one knows what happens there.
I think Alex Anthopoulos is like Obadiah from Iron Man 1, where he's like, Tony Stark built this in a cave with a box of scraps.
Whenever I see that, I immediately think of the Travis Kelce and Andy Reid bit. He built it in a cave with a box of scraps.
Yeah, Taiwan Walker, it was announced on Sunday he's going to start the season on the injured list. He's got a right shoulder impingement. Return date expected is to be determined. He said he felt something while playing catch on March 23rd. He said no injections or MRI examined were required. He said he only needs to rest. We'll see how that goes. Shoulder injury for a pitcher is always a cause for concern in my brain. But hopefully, you know, things get right, because Taiwan's velocity this spring was way down, was still having first inning issues. And I'd rather him take as much time to get right than, you know, try to rush back and force a worse, you know, case scenario on his shoulder. But that's the interesting part of this. I know they're going to be pitching Wheeler on regular rest, so it'll go Wheeler, Nola, Ranger Suarez, Christopher Sanchez, Zach Wheeler to start the season, and then there's going to be some ramp-up time for Spencer Turnbull since he signed a little bit later in spring training, yeah. But it's a guy who threw a no-hitter before.
I will point this out, too, and the people look at situations like this and immediately go, hey, like, we need to start filling these gaps, but when you're in a situation, like I said, that you can score 7 runs a night, you can afford to get a little creative with the back end of your rotation as well. People forget that there are very well able bodies that are in the Phillies farm system that can very much take a spot start or can stay in rotation for a couple of weeks. And you know what? I don't think Dave Dombrowski's afraid of ruining the Super 2 rule because none of these guys are named Chris Bryant and are going to need team control for umpteen years. Mick Abel was one of the best pitchers in AAA last year. Stud.
He was great in the spring breakout game, too.
Exactly. Could very well afford some good innings. I wouldn't call up Andrew Painter, obviously the number one prospect.
He's still recovering from Tommy John.
Exactly. And he's still figuring out his things through AA, so it isn't worth pushing you through that area. But again, whether or not they're even starting pitchers, everyone, for those of you who don't know this, everybody joins an MLB rotation or a MLB farm system as a starting pitcher, and they grow into a reliever from there. I know he's listed right now on the opening day roster as a reliever, but what's his name? Orin Kerkering started out his career as a starting pitcher.
Starting on the injured list as well.
Very well. Damn it. I thought I had a really strong point there to make and absolutely just butchered it.
A lot of people think he's going to end up being the closer when he comes back. So hopefully he developed another pitch at a comfortable rate this spring too, because that was one of his misses during the postseason last year. But again, I love Orion Kerkering.
But again, once he's back, was a 3-year starter at USF and converted to a closer because their closer graduated, went to the MLB, put him in, and he was a stud. So there's very much a possibility that he can produce. And again, there are other names who have the ability to put in time when they need to.
Like my boy Griff McGarry. What a name. What a name.
It's a terrific name. And look, like I said, they get blown up for 4 or 5 runs. You can manage that because you have an offense that can easily put up 6 to 7 runs a night. And it helps when the bats from 1 through 9, probably the scariest lineup in baseball.
As we're recording this on Sunday, it's the 24th. You guys are listening and watching to this on the 25th. When do you think Jordan Montgomery signs?
I wonder what the last time is that a player held out for so long.
The last one I remember was Jake Arrieta, like on a personal level with the Phillies, and he waited until mid-March to sign. Another Scott Boras guy.
Longest MLB contract holdouts. That's MLB draft. We don't need to revisit Kumar Rocker not wanting to join the Mets. Let's see. 20 infamous sports contract holdouts. 10 biggest contracts in baseball history. We have like nothing on here. Holdouts in sports. Let's see what Wikipedia has to offer if we have absolutely anything on here. We don't. Yeah, I don't remember a time that we've had a pitcher wait this long in order to get signed. I know it's happened in the NFL where there have been guys who are like, oh, I'm going to hold out for 4, 5, 6 weeks and then all of a sudden get signed. When does he get signed? I think at some juncture with the season starting in a week.
Less than
a week.
Thursday.
Hold on. This is going to be the answer to all of my questions. The Red Sox begin the year playing... Oh, God. They begin the year playing the Mariners, then the A's.
But it also feels like the Red Sox don't want to spend money this year.
I agree with you, but if you can get Jordan Montgomery for a 1-year, $15 million deal, it's kind of worth it. If the Red Sox finish out the first week of the year against the Mariners and A's, and they have 2 or less wins, they're going to turn themselves and they're going to go, oh, shit. And I think... Someone is going to get desperate and pull the trigger and just give Jordan Montgomery the opportunity to pitch, and ultimately he will leave after the year. Honestly, and this is what I said about the Mets getting JD Martinez, $12 million for JD Martinez to hit in the middle of your lineup, even at 36 years old, is genius. Because even if you suck, which we all know the Mets are going to suck, you deal him for the 18th ranked prospect in some team's system by by the end of August.
The fascinating part about Jordan Montgomery, too, as opposed to like Cody Bellinger,
you can trade him.
Chapman and Snell. I'm saying on the service level of just signing the guy, there's no qualifying offer tied to Jordan Montgomery because he was traded midseason. So you can't offer him the qualifying offer this offseason. So you wouldn't lose draft compensation by signing him, which makes it crazy that he's the last one standing.
The better question isn't when will Jordan Montgomery sign? It's when will Jordan Montgomery A, can Scott Boras, or B, Scott Boras realize he's ruining his clients and finally pull trig, knowing that his player at some point is going to dump him because he's been an absolute dumpster fire the last 2 years.
Or Jordan Montgomery realizes, hey, I'm not going to end up in Texas or St. Louis again. I need to broaden my horizons, because that's also been a story about him. Like, he wants to play in Texas or St. Louis or in the Midwest. Like, none of these teams are going to sign you there because they're pretty much set. Like, the Rangers just finished out their rotation by signing Lorenzen. The Cardinals aren't going to sign you because I think the Cardinals are going to absolutely stink this year. You know, the Cubs aren't going to dish out money after they just gave Bellinger that contract. Like, there's not going to be preferred destination teams for you. And I think if you're smart and you're Jordan Montgomery and you're coming off of a World Series championship, go to a place that, one, has the money, two, has a relationship with Scott Boras, like the Phillies, like the Yankees, a big market team, and gives you the best opportunity to go back to back and put another ring on your finger and make it so that next year you're actually worth the money you're seeking.
One final thing that I think is a I'm reading an article now on the prospects of Jordan Montgomery going anywhere by MLB Trade Rumors. The Southpaw's camp has two long-term offers on the table, and they could sign somewhere as soon as this week. It's unclear which teams have made an offer, but he's connected to both the Yankees and Red Sox as of this week. Montgomery, one club it appears is not among the two teams to have made an offer to Montgomery at this point is Philadelphia. But that's not to say Philadelphia doesn't have an interest in the lefty, according to Bob Nightingale. There is internal discussions. But Scott Boras is apparently anti the idea of not getting a deal for Jordan Montgomery that isn't worth at least multiple years. Which, again, like, why would you even go through... I get it. Like Blaise Snell's on, what, a 3-year deal for like $15 million a year. He's going to wind up leaving, probably. Or if he does want to stay in San Francisco, if they have success, he'll probably opt out and then try and restructure his contract anyways. There's absolutely no reasoning to rush this, because at the end of the day, even if the Yankees get him, like, so be it. Odds are he'll wind up, knowing the Yankees, probably either get hurt or get dished out at some point as well. Going back quickly to the bullpen, too, I think is a compelling point. The Red Sox actually just released, the Angels, just released Drew Pomeranz. While not the greatest pitcher on earth the last 2 years,
I don't hate it at all.
I'm looking at the stats wrong. Dating back to, in 2020 and 2021, he had a 1.45 and a 1.75 ERA across 40-ish innings in San Diego. Again, hasn't pitched in 2 years at the MLB level, but I think is more than capable of giving you some sort of a boost on the back end. And he's younger than other options like Alex Colome, Aaron Loop, and Brent Hand.
Yeah, I don't hate that. That would be fun. The other part here, baseball-wise, before we shift to the big baseball story and try to wrap our brains around that, because I think I can talk about this now that by the time you guys are listening to this, I'll be on my way there. Your boy's going to be at Citizens Bank Park Sneak Peek Day. Got the invite from the Philadelphia Phillies. Very, very thankful and appreciative for the opportunity. So across all of our socials, my own personal social as well, you're going to be seeing a whole lot of things that are coming to Citizens Bank Park this season, from food items to giveaways to merchandise that will be in the team store. There's a new mural that's being unveiled from a contest winner that I'm very excited to see, and the artist is going to be there. Mickey Morandini is going to be on location at Citizens Bank Park, so I'll hopefully be able to chat it up for a little bit with Mickey Morandini. And, you know, this all got started late last season with us trying to curate a relationship with the Phillies. And I like, it's wild when I take myself out of it for a second and kind of look back, and it's like, goddamn, like, this is my favorite team in the city, and here I am, like, working media wise with them. We're trying to build our relationship with the Phillies as this season progresses and beyond. And it all starts Monday at Sneak Peek Day. I'm very excited. Like I said, very thankful and grateful for the opportunity. And it's going to be like the new kid in school rolling up at Citizens Bank Park, surrounded by media members that most of them I know of through Twitter, and we follow each other, but we've never met in person. And they're going to be like, what are you doing here?
I just really hope that the Philadelphia Phillies can offer something that is better than when the New York Mets rolled out a rainbow cookie wonton. I think it's the grossest looking thing I've ever seen in my entire life.
Would try it.
Might get diabetes.
Worth it.
Long-term health issues. Eh.
Would give it a go. It didn't look as bad as some other things I've seen at ballparks.
The fried grasshoppers in Seattle are worth it. Final point.
Fair.
You know what isn't worth it?
Transferring $4.5 million to your interpreter and potentially risking your MLB career.
I was going to say signing the greatest baseball player on God's given earth to a $700 million deal, all in annuities, only to find out that he's wiring $4 million to someone who is a complete liar, who's basically the guy from Catch Me If You Can, who was played by Leonardo DiCaprio, just that he's Japanese and not American.
Yeah, and it is all brought to you by our pals over at Kenwood Beer.
Wow, perfect segue
of Underground Sports Philadelphia.
I need a beer now.
It's a refreshing light beer, just 4.1% ABV, 120 calories, just 8 grams of carbs. Kenny's are going to be on deck all baseball season and all year round. They've been on deck all March Madness for us. You know, they are the best in the game. And, you know, this story may have you crack open a few ice cold Kenny's. So go to kenwoodbeer.com and use the Kenny Finder to see who's got it on tap in the Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Maryland, and New Jersey areas. You can also get it at your local liquor store in those markets. And of course, check out their storefront on their website as well. They got awesome Kenny pint glasses, some awesome apparel. It's kenwoodbeer.com. Must be 21 or older to do so. And of course, please drink responsibly. I have an article pulled up from The Ringer. Ben Lindbergh wrote this. It's 5 big questions about MLB's investigation into Shohei Ohtani and his interpreter. So if you live under a rock or don't follow baseball, the Dodgers and Padres open the MLB season in Korea, and a huge story just drops in the middle of the night that allegedly Shohei Ohtani's interpreter, Ippei Mizuhara, had a $4.5 million gambling debt. And Shohei Ohtani, there's evidence that his name is on 2 of the wire transfers to pay off said debt or whatever it may be. But Shohei's attorneys are calling this a massive theft, and that Shohei had no clue about what the happenings were. There, like, it feels like every 30 minutes there's something new that changes or comes out about this story. It's so insane to try to keep up with. But the 5 questions that The Ringer asked, number one, obviously the question that everyone was wondering off rip, were any bets placed on baseball? That's the thing that has to have everyone's brain in a pretzel. Which would be insane. And I did see some very like funny joke type of tweets where everyone was like, now why would you sign a contract for $700 million and defer most of it to later down the line if you weren't getting into some weird ass shit?
To be honest with you, the first time I heard about this, I'm driving into work on WFAN, and for some reason I thought of some like weird Squid Game thing. Not to be profiling these guys because they both happen to be Japanese. Which I think the show was Korean anyways, but anyways. I don't know. So I thought some like weird Squid Game shit was about to go down, that like we have massive gambling debts and people are just like too hooked on this one thing, and all of a sudden we're gonna ship off Ippei Mizuhara to some like game show to fight for his life in order to get rid of his debt. I wrote down a couple of things really quickly.
I have to point out, the gambling thing, it was allegedly to an illegal bookmaking operation.
Yes. So that's what brings all of this into question. And I wrote down three scenarios that we're currently invested in, all on my fun little notepad. Number one, Ippei Mizuhara did it and Shohei didn't know about it, which is actually false. So we're going to just scratch that one out. Ippei did it and Shohei did know, which is a possibility. And the third one here, which I think is the most compelling one, probably the funniest one and the worst one, is that Ippei didn't do it. Shohei's the one who's gambling. He did it through Ippei's name, and the wire transfer, he's just stupid enough to not cover his tracks. Which would be the, I don't want to say the greatest, because it's horrible, because I love the fact that Shohei Ohtani is the greatest baseball player to ever live, because he could do something that no one since 1920 can do. Since the last guy who did it was actively eating hot dogs, smoking beer, and banging hookers in the dugout. But like the greatest demise in all of sports history, and arguably even worse than Pete Rose's gambling, the Black Sox throwing the 1919 World Series. Honestly, this is probably, well, this is already the biggest thing in all of sports probably ever. And why is it that it's always baseball?
Always.
It's either the baseball players or it's Calvin Ridley doing something dumb. Like,
now, number one, if it's allegedly theft, that sucks, and Ippei's just a moron, you know, trying to take advantage of it. I don't think it's that. Yeah, because the story continues to change. And again, all of this stuff, allegedly. We have no facts because Shohei still hasn't spoken to the media, which he's doing tomorrow or Tuesday.
So this is kind of where things segue. First of all, I think that Shohei knew about this the whole time. And the initial story was supposed to be something like, quote unquote, like feel good, I guess you could say. Like, oh, Shohei's doing charity for his friend who has a gambling debt and he's trying to support his friend. Then the story changes 4.5 hours later. And now I'm starting to think, did Shohei Ohtani's PR team realize that he's going to get suspended by the league? Because the CBA specifically says whether or not you gamble, if you are linked to a illegal bookie or any sort of gambling ring, you are suspended, therefore, by the CBA, and is now trying to turn it on his best friend, allegedly, that he's the one who had access to his accounts, which, why would you give someone access to your account when he's only your interpreter? And then to steal $4.5 million, we're talking about Jeff Bezos. Ohtani knows when someone's taken away $4 million of your own money. I really do think that there is a deeper issue here, and whether that goes to either A, the credibility of Ohtani's PR team, B, the truthfulness of Shohei Ohtani, or C, the just complete mishandling of every ounce of this relationship, and the fact that they're trying to now pin this on him is really fucked up, for lack of a better term. But where I will give Shohei Ohtani the benefit of the doubt is that amongst all of this, and amidst all of this, Ippei Mizuhara might also be the greatest con man on earth. So an article in Barstool Sports via my man Hubs, the title reads, as Shohei Ohtani announces he will speak to reporters on Monday, we're now being led to believe his former translator Ippei Mizuhara is a massive liar who never attended UC Riverside nor worked for the Boston Red Sox. First of all, Hubs, it's a very long title. You should shorten it a little bit. Second of all, first thing you learn in journalism school, short titles kill.
Hubs always does that with his blogs at Barstool, though. And he's one of the editors-in-chief, so he kind of gets a little leeway with doing what he wants.
So again, for those of you who know nothing about any of this, Ippei Mizuhara allegedly went to UC Riverside out in California, got his first job working spring training for the Yankees, and was signed and worked for the Red Sox as the interpreter for Hideki Okajima, their World Series winning reliever. Then got a job immediately after Ohtani's posting and signing by the Angels when he signed in 2017. For years, the Angels media guy, this is according to it, to his article, listed Mizuhara as having graduated from the University of California Riverside in 2007, and then he spent spring training in 2012 working for the Yankees as an interpreter for Hideki Okajima. Also, multiple news reports noted that Mizuhara started as Okajima's interpreter in 2010 with the Red Sox, where he was reportedly got his first major league opportunity. However, as first reported by NBC LA this week, the university disputed the notion that Mizuhara had ever even attended the school, much less having graduated, saying, quote, a school spokesman told The Athletic, "Our university records do not show a student by the name of Ipe Mizuhara having attended UC Riverside." Furthermore, Mizuhara's connection to Okajima seemed to have been exaggerated as well. Multiple news reports have linked Mizuhara to Okajima over different periods, including a Nippon.com story from 2021 that says Mizuhara was Okajima's interpreter during the 2010 season with the Red Sox. However, not only has the Red Sox denied this, but archives from the Boston Globe in April and May of 2010 named Ryo Shinkawa as Okajima's interpreter. As well, there are two interpreters listed on the team's media guide, neither one being Ipe Mizuhara. Searches on two different news databases also did not bring up any results featuring Mizuhara prior to 2018 when Ohtani first signed him to the Angels. This is starting to make me believe that partially Mizuhara might actually be stealing from Ohtani. But if Ohtani doesn't know about it, that's just dumb on his part. He should know better. But I do think that maybe this all might have been a situation where Mizuhara is taking advantage of possibly his friend, or unbeknownst to his friend, is taking advantage of him, and Shohei is just trying to be a good guy and give money, but he knows that he's kind of fucked either way.
The other interesting part of this, too, this is an article from Tisha Thompson from ESPN that came out a couple days ago. There's a screen grab of it that she posted, and it's like a conversation between ESPN and Ipe. Number one, why the fuck is Ipe talking to anybody without a lawyer?
Oh, yeah.
So this is what it goes on to say. When did Ohtani become aware of this situation? Ipe says, "They told me I can't answer anything." Ohtani's representatives, are they representing you? Ipe says, "No." Are you taking any form of payment to tell me these things? No. Have you made any kind of agreement to say these things? No. You're doing this off your own volition and free will? Yes. Did you bet on baseball? No. Did you lie to Shohei? Yes. ESPN asks if he ever purposely misinformed Ohtani while interpreting the issues the reporter is asking about. Mizuhara says, "No, I have never done that." The ESPN reporter texts him with a final question, quote, "Did you take the money from Shohei's account without his knowledge?" There is no response.
Yeah. I think we got
to which my guy and our guy, John Boy, quote tweets it and says, "Does Ipe need to be using a lawyer? Wait, these are text messages. Ipe, why are you texting back? Turn that phone off and get a lawyer."
So, yeah, where am I on here as well? So that same article, because I've been curious about this, and I've contacted my one friend who works for the DA here in the Bronx in New York. Granted, this is a very different law situation because mm-hmm. we're based out of LA. But if Ipe Mizuhara is arraigned, convicted, and everything else, first of all, it's wire fraud. Second of all, it's grand larceny. Third of all, any amount of this money is, also a part of a conspiracy to earn money and submit money through an illegal gambling ring, which is another like 4 years. This guy's going to face probably like 50 years in prison. Not to mention, apparently, he also didn't put this on his tax returns that just came out. So he's equally boned there. So it's also now account fraud.
John Boy also put a screenshot out. I'm not sure where this is from, but it's from The Athletic. It has to be because it mentions Britt Garoli, who's phenomenal at her job. John Boy said 365 days of the year. Doesn't the job only exist when a third person is there? And the screen grab says, "I'm with him all off season two, Mizuhara told Brittany Garoli of The Athletic in 2023. I'm with him 365 days of the year, which I think is different than the other interpreters."
So Hubs goes on to say this. So, of course, Ohtani's talking to the media tomorrow, and we'll get some more news on this. He goes, and I, so post a tweet from Fabian Ardaya. Shohei Ohtani said he will talk tomorrow when approached by reporters. He goes, so what actually happens tomorrow? I only see three possibilities. Number one, Ohtani is approached by reporters in passing tomorrow and simply gives them a friendly hello, thus satisfying the above tweet. No other quotes are exchanged, and the mystery continues. Number two, Ohtani says he'd love to comment but can't since this is an ongoing federal investigation. All we get is a bunch of PR mumbo-jumbo, much to our chagrin. Third, Ohtani gives a heartfelt account of what happened, detailing the betrayal of his longtime best friend. He appears visibly shook, and we're forced to believe him because how could anyone actually stay mad at Shohei Ohtani? Four, Shohei goes rogue and fully admits to his wrongdoings, going as far to admit he was the one who was gambling on baseball. He retires from the sport effective immediately as he walks away from the shell-shocking media session. Bob Nightingale notices something is off and follows Ohtani around the corner of the complex. The person appearing as Ohtani rips off his face in Mission Impossible style, revealing it was in fact Ippei Mizuara speaking the entire time while wearing a mask. Bob tweets his account of the moment, but in classic Bob Nightingale fashion, no one can understand anything he's trying to say. Nightingale never realizes the botched tweet and goes along with his business without a care in the world. Years go by with the feds unable to locate Ohtani until years from now he breaks captivity and shows up like a Rosamund Pike in Gone Girl out of the blue to tell his side of the story. A manhunt for Ippei begins, but he's never seen or heard from again. With no way to prove his side of the story, Ohtani is arrested and banned from baseball for life. Decades now from now, Ippei sends out a notes app tweet revealing everything, but the damages have already been done.
Hubs is the best.
Why is it that I feel like scenario number three would just be absolutely perfect? It would be. Have you ever seen the movie The Producers?
Yes.
Perfect idea of how Bloom and Ula go to Brazil and leave Bialystok stuck in the in Sing Sing prison as he reads Mein Kampf. But again, the fallout of Shohei Ohtani would just be miserable for everybody. And the worst part was it was that I was literally about to order an Ohtani jersey off DHgate, and now I'm so happy that I didn't.
Well, I have an on-card auto Shohei one of one when he was with the Angels right up there.
It's going to be worth a lot of money to some psycho collectors soon enough. I feel like the Ohtani jersey is going to become synonymous with like the Manziel Browns jersey. You're going to see them at every frat party in America because it's the biggest fall off in a sports career ever. And again, in 10 years, we're going to get the documentary from Netflix, Untold, the story of Shohei Ohtani.
Or, you know, it comes out that maybe Shohei was getting robbed without knowing. Who knows? You know, that's still a likely scenario, but
you can't be that dumb.
You can't be. But it is a wild ongoing situation, and I feel like I did see a tweet. It said, "There's one of two outcomes: Shohei gets banned for life, or Pete Rose ends up in the Hall of Fame."
Do you know who banned Pete Rose from the Hall of Fame?
Bud?
No. This is totally tangenting from what we're talking about. If you ever go to a trivia night and you are asked who is the MLB commissioner that banned Pete Rose, and the hint is that he is the father of a famous Hollywood actor, the answer is Paul Giamatti's dad, Bart.
I did know that, actually.
Bart Giamatti was the commissioner of baseball for like 6 months, and his first order of business was to ban Pete Rose.
Absolutely insane ongoings with Shohei.
But knowing Rob Manfred, he would be like, oh, we're not going to ban him. We're just going to put him in the Hall of Fame already. Commemorate him. He'll get his own shrine. Because Rob Manfred is that much of a dodo.
It's such a wild story, too, that like it comes out while the team is overseas.
You know what it is? It makes things. I don't know if it makes things better because the immediate impact he can avoid the American media, or it's only going to make things worse because now they're going to go back to LA. They're not even going to go to Arizona. They're going to play their remaining games. By the way, their first weekend series, actually, what was this weekend, was against the Angels. The media is just lighting up fires everywhere. And honestly, the city of LA might find itself in an absolute fire show.
It's going to be absolutely insane. Lesson learned, don't defer contracts. Steve will tell you firsthand.
Now, if Shohei Ohtani gets banned from baseball, or let's say suspended, right, and his contract gets upended and he gets released by the Dodgers, do the Phillies go and sign him?
Fuck yeah.
Speaking of sports related conspiracies that we're currently under, did you hear that the guy, the PI who's been allegedly trying to figure out whether or not OJ killed his wife, is now figuring out that it was his son who killed his wife, and OJ tried to cover it up and say it was him, or cover it up as the fall guy?
Jesus.
Yeah, so this is apparently now a thing. This PI is just like claiming that his son actually committed the murders, and that his father was driving the vehicle to get away, but did not want to be a part of it because he still, quote unquote, loved his wife.
Sure. Sure, Jan.
So that's the world is just crazy in sports.
Absolutely nuts. Speaking of madness, Steve, let's kick it to the madness. It's Underground Madness, brought to you by our pals over at Dead Threads. The best. That is Dead Threads. It's the intersection of art, sport, pop culture, all into one in a very underground aesthetic, if you will. From your favorite professional sports leagues, college, they've got you covered with some of the coolest apparel in the game. And we're doing a fun portion of our Underground Madness Bracket Challenge that will be announced by the time you guys are listening to this. Submit your dead brackets, because we know everyone's bracket is dead. Submit those dead brackets to our DMs at UndergroundPHI on Twitter or Instagram. Let us see those bad boys, and we're going to pick a couple people who, at the end of the tournament, will receive some sweet swag from Dead Threads. You guys can also check out their entire catalog of merchandise that I'm sure more will be updated and added as the weeks go by. When you go to deadthreads.shop and use code underground and you get 10% off your order, you can also click the link in the description. That's deadthreads.shop, code underground, for 10% off. If you want to purchase things and support us, or click the link in the description and do that as well. But submit your dead brackets, because dead brackets equals dead threads.
More brackets are about to be dead in about 3.5 minutes. I want to give a quick update as of this recording at 9:28 on a Sunday. Grand Canyon's down by one at the U4 timeout against Alabama. First of all, I had St. Mary's meeting up with, oh, look at that, New Mexico in the Elite Eight. I already had a kerosene fire in the backyard for my bracket, and for an honorary fire for everyone else's bracket. I even roasted some marshmallows, just so you guys know. Busted brackets make sure great. A great smelling crisp marshmallow. It's almost as good as when you put apple wood on the fire. So that's where we're at right now with Grand Canyon and Alabama. Some other games that are up today. Purdue, an absolute stinker against Utah State, 106-67. North Carolina advances and will take on the winner of this GCU and Bama game. Clemson upsets Baylor, one of the best games that Clemson's played, and I really do think that Clemson's going to be your team in the Elite Eight, one of those teams that I'm heavily following after beating my New Mexico team. Tennessee beat Texas. Creighton should hopefully take down Tennessee there. And then NC State Marquette is going to be an absolute barn burner, with the winner of Houston A&M going to play Duke. I wish the Dukes would have beaten Duke, but unfortunately did not come to fruition. And Illinois will meet up with Iowa State in their matchup in the Sweet 16 next week. And then finally, Yale and San Diego State will be played following the Yale-Northwestern game, and we'll see who will take on the Huskies on the eastern region of the bracket. Bama knocks down two free throws, 64-61. So, the madness.
I love that this is a year, too, that everyone was very down on Gonzaga, and it's just typical Gonzaga in the tournament.
I was not. I want to put this out there, and Ryan Hammer, who we had on the show, who was fantastic when we did have him on, made a really valid point. So he gave his reveal to the bracket, and he like went through every region, and he was like, look, like John Rothstein said that the more you know, the worse you're going to do. And I want to let everyone know, like, I pick my bracket not based on who's going to win, but how can I get a leg up on everybody else in a bracket challenge? I do have one bracket that I think is like the accuracy of who's going to win every game. But for example, right, like I'm the guy who took like Charleston over Alabama because no one's picking that game. I took Mississippi State over Michigan State, reason being everyone's going to take Michigan State. My fiance knows who Tom Izzo is. Like that right there is an easy pick for me to go for Mississippi State. Teams pick, let's say another example, like, everyone wanted Morehead State. Obviously, Illinois was a popular team there. If you look at the numbers, Yale was actually a better team on paper than Auburn. But if Auburn was able to get past Yale, they probably would have been a matchup nightmare for UConn. So I picked my bracket that way. How it's ended up, though, is that we've ended up with a bracket that is, as of now, going into the Sweet 16 next weekend, one of actually something that's a lot more chalky than I think people were expecting. I know like the Oakland and the NC State upsets were not particularly surprises. We kind of saw NC State coming. Oakland, we had no idea what was going to happen. But if you look at the breakout, right, the majority of people had a Creighton, Tennessee, Midwest region with Purdue and Gonzaga. And if it wasn't Gonzaga, it was Kansas. Most people have a Marquette, Houston final in the Elite Eight. NC State very well might have gotten there. I know a lot of people were bullish on Kentucky. We now know that Calipari and nobody at Kentucky should ever be trusted. They will firmly be planted on the 2024 shit list that I will be writing down at the end of the year to give you guys the insight on who to never bet ever again. I personally didn't see Illinois getting this far. I thought that they would have lost to BYU, but unbeknownst to me, Duquesne got the Keith Dambro and LeBron James like Mike experience. LeBron gave them all shoes, and all of a sudden they turned into the goats of basketball for a day. And then again, like UConn is running away with the Eastern region, and they're going to probably wind up taking on either Yale or San Diego State. If it is San Diego State, the Mountain West always gets diabolical in situations like this. But again, very chalky for what everyone thought. I thought New Mexico was going to go far. I thought Iowa State would lose to Drake. They beat Wazoo handedly last night. I thought UNC would have a problem with either St. Mary's or with New Mexico. They will not have to deal with that. We're probably going to have a scenario where North Carolina is going to run Alabama or GCU out of the gym. Neither one of those are going to go very far. So, like you look at Elite Eight matchups, it'll actually be a lot more chalky than you think. We're probably going to have a situation where it's Creighton versus either Purdue or Gonzaga, North Carolina versus likely Arizona, unless Clemson can pull off a strong upset. Probably going to be UConn, Iowa State, which everyone I think had in the East region. And then likely Marquette, Houston, which, and even if it's NC State, that's the one outlier there. A double-digit seed has made the Elite Eight every single year for the last 6 years. The only team at this point who fits the category is going to be either Yale or NC State. Which one is more likely? I don't think either one. If anybody, it's Yale on the sole premise that repeating in the NCAA tournament is so challenging. But again, UConn's getting a home game in front of 20,000 at the Garden.
I'm all in on NC State as the vibes team.
There is actually a Chaminade graduate who plays for NC State. Fun fact, brother of he didn't go to the PLL or anything, but he was a top player in college across for a long time at Maryland. Tom O'Connell. I don't know if you know him. Top player at Maryland. Played basketball for a year, I think, in his grad year at St. John's on North Bench. But his brother is apparently filthy, and he's one of the top scorers for NC State. I mean,
yeah, he was a Maryland. His brother was a Maryland lacrosse commit, and then went and played basketball.
That's kind of crazy, actually. That's amazing. I think UConn. I think
also I'm cracking up at ESPN's post because obviously Duke beat JMU, unfortunately.
Yeah,
and Jared McCain had 30 points and made 8 threes, and the caption on their post with a bunch of fire photoshopped around him is he's 2 days into the NCAA tournament and helping take Duke to the Sweet 16.
My second day of the tournament.
I'm 2 days into tourney.
Bama, by the way, just beat GCU. I want to let everyone know they will get absolutely rolled by RJ Davis and Armando Bacot, two future insurance agents. I'm just like depressed with how bad I'm doing with this bracket partially. Meanwhile, my friend Jack, who knows jack shit about basketball, college basketball for that matter, is second in the Underground Madness bracket challenge. And he goes, yo, CFO Margie's going hard. And I'm like, CFO Margie also has no idea about college basketball.
That Jackie Suits?
It is Jackie Suits.
Jackie fucking Suits.
Jackie fucking Suits is going ham right now. I don't know where I am. I'm probably like dead last, honestly.
Yeah, so CFO Margie unfortunately got a little blip on the radar with Baylor getting knocked out. She had Baylor in the Elite Eight. But still has the most points right now, has the second most points still available to her bracket. But I don't know who the current leader is in the clubhouse in terms of max points. So got to change your bracket name there if you want to be eligible for our prize pool. But CFO Margie leading the way of all people in terms of our bracket challenge.
Who let Carlos Boozer be like a top 100 bracket in the country? Like, who let that happen?
That's insane.
I love how ESPN's Tournament Challenge puts up like everyone's like thing. I just want to let everybody know that I have a better bracket, despite it being absolutely horrible, than the following people. I don't even know actually who any of these people are. I'm trying to find someone who I know. Gary Streisky, the guy who does Snapchat ESPN. Let's see. Takeo Spikes, I'm doing much better than him. Tyler Fulgham, I'm doing better than Molly Karam, former Quinnipiac alumni as well, so I'm at least beating one person who went to my college. I'm doing better than Reese Davis. Why is Big Sean on here? And why did Big Sean pick Michigan State to win? Izzo March. I'm also doing better than Hannah Storm and Jay Billis.
That's because you're like, pro-court storming.
I am very pro-court storm, and I am very much on the bandwagon for that. And even like EJ Manuel is doing really good. Why? Like,
that's
why
a name EJ I haven't Manuel heard doing in a very long time.
I want to give a shout-out, though, to Kamala Harris. I don't know if we talked about this on the
stream,
but I think it's really important to put this out on here on the main Webbers. So you know how like politicians always give like very chalky brackets? They're too afraid to get like ballsy. I think like Obama had like two or three upsets, maybe tops, in his bracket, which I think all of them hit. Actually, it was like NC State. It was might have been Duquesne, and it was JMU. Anyhow, Kamala Harris was the one person, bless you, honey, who had the balls to pick Oakland and Jack Golke Honda to beat Kentucky, only for us to find out that she is from Oakland, California, and thought the University of Oakland was in Oakland, California.
I did find out why
EJ Manuel... It's like dumb luck turnout.
I did find out why EJ Manuel is filling out a bracket on ESPN.
Why?
It's because he's an analyst for the ACC network, which is owned by ESPN.
Isn't EJ Manuel a quarterback?
Former quarterback, retired in 2019.
Oh my god, whose bracket is this? There's someone who filled out a bracket on ESPN called Mom Hiding in the Bathroom. Like, what?
What the heck?
Mom Hiding in Bathroom, and his photo is a mom hiding in the bathroom.
Also, shout out to the Longwood Lancers. You got two fans in us for life because, one, you retweeted us, so you recognize the brand. But number two, they're incredibly metal flute player.
Get flute girl on this pod.
Oh, I'm working on it.
So I I'm going to say this because I didn't say it on stream, but I'm going to say it now. This girl has posted some very odd things on her Twitter. And she posted an at that apparently has some sort of like relation to Metal Gear Solid and Solid Snake. I thought it was an OnlyFans account, and I openly did, in fact, look in my private browsing to see if this girl had an OnlyFans, only to then be very not. I'm not even going to say disappointed, but just like shocked that she didn't. I feel like college girl goes to Longwood, is as metal as she is, might be selling photos of her feet. I don't really know. I think it would make sense.
Super metal. I love the video. She is new flute girl, replacing Villanova's crying flute girl from years ago.
Did you see that people were simping over like this pretty girl who went to Kentucky? And she's there. She's like this, like all like annoyed that Jack Golke is just jackknifing threes in her face. And it turns out it's like the former AD's like daughter who goes to Kentucky, and she's like getting like letters sent to her dorm room now that like everyone's like, yo, what's up? Sliding into DMs and shit. This girl's gained like 400,000 followers on social media in like hours. Crazy stuff. March Madness is not only good for upping white guys' draft stock, it's also great for getting people who are somehow just like out of nowhere put on TV. Super famous. By the way, I also found this out. You remember the Northwestern crying kid?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, do you know that he goes to Harvard?
Yeah.
And the reason he goes to Harvard is because he wrote in his college essay that he was the crying kid.
It's amazing.
Where was I when I was 12 years old that I couldn't be the fucking crying kid? Or
we are going to have
to couldn't be up. Scumbag Steve.
We have to come up with, at the end of the tournament, like our like top 10 people, moments, players of this year's tournament. Flute girl / Longwood are totally on the list. Where they fall on the list remains to be seen, but they're totally on the list.
We should do so. I found this out recently as well. So, being a Quinnipiac graduate in Connecticut, I found out that a lot of Quinnipiac graduates work at ESPN. It turns out that the ESPN top 10 is not an actual thing voted on by multiple people within a room. It's just whoever's chosen to cut the clips that day picks their top 10. So I'm like, some 21-year-old is picking X school to be in ESPN's top 10. And for some reason, you wonder why Quinnipiac always makes it for some mediocre dunk or something. It's because some Quinnipiac student is doing these top 10s. And what really upsets me. So therefore, I'm going to vouch. So we collect Underground Sports into a room and we collectively vote on our top 10. So it's not. So we are utilizing a democracy and not just some one-off person who's determining that Flute Girl is the seventh-ranked person in this thing.
But I will say, Longwood / Flute Girl have a spot on the list. Where on that list remains to be seen. But if you interact with the brand, you have a seat at my table.
My projection is sixth.
I don't hate that. Did you also see what Big Cat said about Jack Golke?
No.
They were talking about him during their game, and Mark Titus was like, we have to hire Golke. And Big Cat was like, they were talking about, yeah, we got to hire him. Big Cat was like, I don't even want to hire him to do like content. I just want to hire him to stare at him. Like, welcome to our office. This is our Golke. This is our popcorn machine.
First of all, that guy has a huge forehead. Second of all, I saw a great tweet. Kansas super senior Hunter Dickinson has entered the transfer portal, sources tell me. He's already heard from the following destinations: LinkedIn, McDonald's, Indeed, Monster Energy, Amazon Prime Delivery, Wendy's, Walmart, ZipRecruiter, Starbucks, Target, and the University of Michigan. Yeah. By the way, he does have a sixth year available because of COVID.
That's insane.
And then, apparently, like Armando Bacot is going to go to the G League, and he's going to make, listen to this, 1/5 of what he's made in his last year of college.
Well, he's not going to the G League Ignite because the G League Ignite will no longer exist after this year.
I don't think he wants to be a part of the G League Ignite, but
they are dunzo.
Totally dunzo.
Good concept. Good to shut it down, though.
Yeah,
100%. Let's keep it pushing. We will we'll have more updates on the madness as it continues throughout the week and everything, but we'll talk a little quick hit here, and it is brought to you by the awesome homies over at the PLL app. That's right, OTB PLL app integration is a thing, and with the Water Dogs coming to town and home cities being a thing, it's the best way to keep up with everything going on in the PLL. Download the PLL app in the App Store, Google Play Store, go to the redeem code section, and type in OTB pod. That's OTB POD, and you'll get 500 XP on your account just for redeeming our code. They're able to track, see how many people are using our code. It is the best. XP is gold in PLL Nation. So download the PLL app, go to the redeem code section, and use code OTBPOD for 500 XP in the PLL app.
I have one quick hitter here. I just received a notice. The Dodgers-Angels spring training game, Ohtani is batting ahead of Mookie Betts. Therefore, Ohtani bets, and therefore, Ohtani's in the wrong. He will get banned by baseball.
Oh, my days.
I fucking knew it.
Golly. I also love that article from like CNN, or I forget who put it out. It was like Ohtani bet on himself or something. Everyone was like, Brian Windhorst meme. What do you mean by that?
Now, my favorite thing was the Ohtani at, like, I think it was like the UConn game or whatever
it
was.
Yeah, in 2021.
And someone quote tweeted it and goes, you cannot tell me that is not the face of someone sweating out Duquesne BYU right now.
That's hilarious.
Uncanny.
The Philadelphia Eagles NFL free agency treks on, and they are just continuing to churn out some signings, and the QB factory is alive and well as the Eagles have signed quarterback Will Greer into the fold to a one-year contract to join Kenny Pickett, Tanner McKee, and of course QB1 Jalen Hurts. I love that the Eagles just continue to bring in these like once famed college quarterbacks, or, you know, quarterbacks that had a lot of hype around them, and bring them in to see if they can get anything out of them.
So like Howie Roseman's funny because he was asked about like why he's doing this. First of all, rest in peace, Ian Book. I hope the Giants pick you up. Then again, he'd be the second straight quarterback that I am completely wrong on. I thought Jake Fromm would be really good. Look at what he's done.
Granted, Ian Book went to the Chiefs this year after the Eagles released him in 2022 and he won the Super Bowl. So
there you go. But Howie Roseman accredited the 49ers to the reason why they're doing this. Apparently he talked to Nick Sirianni about this and he was like, hey, like I want to do X, Y, and Z. One of the things was I want to sign like six quarterbacks to be in the room. And when one of them ultimately goes down, AKA my Trey Lance, I have a Brock Purdy or equivalent who can now step up and automatically solve the world. He goes, if you like one, he goes, you look at the 49ers situation and these guys are hard to find. If you like one, you better take one in reference to what's his name? The new guy, McKee.
Yeah.
Stanford. Yeah. So that's the situation that's currently arising. But like, we're already going to compare this kid to Brock Purdy is sitting in the wing.
I mean, this has been a thing for the Eagles for a long time. We've always talked about the Eagles QB factory from when it was Sam Bradford, Carson Wentz, Nick Foles, and then
Nick Sudfeld.
Nate Sudfeld. Nate Sudfeld. You know,
he's so irrelevant. I shouldn't even have to use his actual name.
Yeah, McNabb and Michael Vick together. Foles was there as well. Like the Eagles are known to carry a lot of quarterbacks. But I like the signing of Will Greer to just see what you have in him. He'll probably be on the practice squad. And, you know, if you can use him in situations, you know, you're going to have that game day quarterback that's not part of the actual roster, but is active for game day. Why not have as many and try to throw darts at the board?
I just want to see Nash Greer do some TikToks with Jalen Hurts.
The Eagles also big time signing that I really like. They signed defensive back Tyler Hall from the Raiders to a 1-year deal. I think that is such a sneaky under the radar move. Slot corner can play really well all over the field. And it's one thing that the Eagles lacked last year when Avante Maddox got injured. They didn't have depth in the slot. I think this is a sneaky under the radar move. And I love the signing of Tyler Hall.
My only question is, and this goes back to the quarterback factory, why Kenny Pickett? Like genuinely curious as to what the broad appeal of Kenny Pickett is.
Cheap. He's only owed like $3 million over the next 2 years, as opposed to everyone clamoring for Justin Fields, which I think Justin Fields ended up in a scenario that's perfect for him.
$3 million.
Justin Fields is
has a $25 million option that the Steelers have to pick up before he even attempts to play it down for them. So you have to make a critical decision on a guy. The Eagles already have Jalen Hurts as your franchise quarterback. You're not going to pay a backup quarterback $25 million. That cancels that out there. And I think with Kenny Pickett, he's very like Gardner Minshew-esque, where he's played in the NFL, has started like 24 games. He's four games over 500 in his NFL career. And I talked about this a couple weeks ago when the signing happened. Kenny Pickett in his NFL career was playing 75-80% of it under the direction of Matt Canada, who was so bad at his job that the Steelers inevitably fired him, and he was the first coach the Steelers have fired during the season since World War II. Adolf Hitler was at the height of his power the last time the Steelers fired a coach in season. Like, wrap your brains around that, everyone. Kenny Pickett also grew up an Eagles fan, so you're bringing him into the organization that he grew up rooting for, and I'm sure that's like a lifelong dream of his and his family's. And I don't think Kenny Pickett is bad. Look at what the Steelers were throwing out the past 2 years. I also think Kenny Pickett's value gets overshadowed because the Steelers reached and used a first-round pick on him, and he was the only quarterback that year taken in the first round. He wasn't a first-round talent. The Steelers were desperate because Big Ben retired. Realistically, in that draft, Kenny Pickett should have been like a third-round pick. So if you evaluate it on that, it's a good, solid move. And if Jalen Hurts does happen to go down, you have a guy who has won 14 games in the NFL in his career, can throw the ball, and he's got way better weapons around him and a much better offensive line in front of him than he did in Pittsburgh.
You know who else has won 14-plus games in his NFL career and is a free agent and would have cost less than Kenny Pickett plus the draft compensation?
Who's that?
Carson Wentz.
Yeah, get him out. Get him out.
The reunion! Come on! It's like an episode of like Vanderpump Rules. You bring him back all of a sudden? It's like, hello! That's the
last thing this city needs. Barkley.
Sudfeld is also available, too. Kyle Allen, Blaine Gabbert, AJ McCarron.
Kenny Pickett's better than all of them.
Matt Barkley, perfect.
I remember
the Giants playing the Eagles, and whoever the quarterback was at the time, I think it was Foles or Wentz, went down, and Barkley comes in, and Matt Barkley ran like 27 straight read option plays because he didn't know the playbook. And all he knew to do was line up the running back to your left or your right, you hand it off, or you run. And I think he had like negative 27 yards.
Unreal.
Classic.
Bring him back. Saquon, not the only New York Giant to come to Philadelphia, as the Eagles signed Paris Campbell to a one-year deal. Obviously, the biggest thing with Paris Campbell is he's got to stay healthy, but I like the prospect of Paris Campbell. If he can stay healthy in the slot, it's a fun, you know, there's no such thing as a bad one-year deal. And if you can get a guy who has some speed and put him in the slot and have Jalen Hurts throwing him the ball while A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith are catching the primary coverage, again, very similar to Devontae Parker in this instance, where a receiver like this is going to be a fifth or sixth option in an offense because you're going to be throwing the ball primarily to A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Dallas Goedert. Saquon Barkley is your fourth option out of the backfield, and then your slot receiver is probably your fifth option in most instances. So I like a dart throw on a Paris Campbell. I think he's better than Quez Watkins, too.
You could have Paris Campbell. I'll raise you one, and I'll sign the Giants with Jalen Mills.
I love Jalen Mills. I will never have a bad thing to say about Jalen Mills. He was one of my favorite players from the moment the Eagles drafted him. Seventh round pick that turned into a certified Super Bowl legend because he was guarding Julio Jones in the divisional round. And he's just so much fun. And I love Jalen Mills.
Meanwhile, I'm the first guy who would say burn your Saquon jerseys. Or if you want, you can put the duct tape over it and just put Singletary. You can keep the Y. You single tear with the actual Y.
You have to laugh at the fact that Saquon's daughter absolutely dunked on the Giants. Does that mean we're going to win now, Daddy?
Screw Saquon Barkley and the horse he rode in on.
You got to remember, Saquon, if you somehow are listening to this, Steve is a bitter Giants fan. We love you here. I'm happy you're here. Welcome home. I think you're going to look great in midnight green.
Remember when I said I was going to kill myself when I drafted Kayvon Thibodeau, though? Oh, God almighty. This team gives me angina. Severe angina.
The Eagles also, I want to get his actual name right because it's not in his social media bio. It's just his handle. It is former Penn State defensive tackle, 1-year deal. His name is King, so great name off rip. Because you can just be like, go off, King. Where is this? Yeah, his social media handle is King, but it's PJ Mustafar, which just reminds me of Mustafar from Star Wars, which is the lava planet where Darth Vader lives. So I'm just going to call.
It's familiar.
I'm going to call PJ Mustafar Darth Vader. He signed a 1-year deal with the Birds. Love that as a depth signing. Obviously, Fletcher Cox retiring. You're going to need some depth in that interior defensive line with Vic Fangio coming in. So I love that signing there to kind of just be a rotational guy, be behind Milton Williams, be behind Jordan Davis, Jalen Carter, and the rest of those boys. So good signing there. And I just love what the Eagles have done in free agency so far. I think they are absolutely crushing it out of the park. They've got a great draft lined up, and the only thing that will make it a gazillion times more exciting for me is if at pick number 22, I hear Roger Goodell say, with the 22nd pick in the 2024 NFL draft, the Philadelphia Eagles select Kool-Aid McKinstry, defensive back, Alabama.
Let's be honest. It's going to be someone who plays defense, and he's going to be from Georgia.
Or an offensive lineman.
Yeah, like there are three things in life that you can never avoid: death, taxes, and the University of Georgia going to the Philadelphia Eagles. Honestly, if Brock Bowers falls down, or honestly, Howie Roseman might say, "Fucking just trade up and just take Brock Bowers," because why the hell not? It makes total sense. Do whatever the hell you want. Who really cares? Actually, in the latest mock draft, they're actually predicted to take. Wait for this. Not Georgia, Toledo's Quinyon Mitchell at the 16th overall pick, which actually isn't a bad pick for what it's worth, but McKinstry would go to the pick before at 15. Well,
the Eagles have the 22nd pick.
Well, they also this is trade with the Seahawks.
Oh, because I'm looking at...
They'll trade up for not McKinstry, but a guy from Toledo.
I'm looking at Tankathon right now. Shout out to those boys.
Makes total sense.
They have the Eagles taking Clemson corner Nate Wiggins.
Interesting. Nate Wiggins here is actually the 27th overall pick to Arizona. So
they have Kool-Aid McKinstry going 25th to DJ's Packers.
Well, someone's wrong between it's Chad Reuter. That's why. Where's Dan Jeremiah? Dan, what did Dan Reuter know that I don't?
What are you going to do when the Giants take JJ McCarthy?
Stop.
That's what Tankathon has you mocked right now.
If the 6th overall pick is anybody not named Joe Alt or Roma Dunze, I might shoot somebody.
JJ McCarthy is just smaller Daniel Jones.
Probably really, really good at TikTok too. Doesn't help.
No, he meditates under the goalpost. Remember,
he's not. I'm cool with that. I'm cool with that. So long as he doesn't look like he went to my high school, which unironically he does, which is kind of the worst part too.
That's hilarious.
Every quarterback to be absolute dog shit in the last 5 years all looked like they went to my high school. Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen, not as much because I went to a private Catholic school and he's Jewish, but close enough. McCarthy 100% looks like a Chaminade kid. And then, of course, Daniel Jones and Zach Wilson both look like they both played lacrosse and both graduated in the same class.
And we're
best friends when they tried to flirt with that one math teacher junior year of high school.
The real fun thing is going to be seeing because have the Jets released Zach Wilson yet, or is he still?
No.
So the real fun thing is what happens first? Jets release Zach Wilson or Jordan Montgomery signs a contract?
Well, they're trying to trade Zach Wilson, and honestly, I don't know what for. They might trade him for when Billy Beane traded so-and-so for soda.
Yeah.
In his clubhouse. He
Minnesota.
Someone tweets out, if that's what Fields gets traded for, can the Jets even get a 2038 conditional 11th round pick? Honestly, brother, I don't know.
But yeah, NFL free agency is trekking on, and it's been a hell of a 2 weeks of it, and there's still more to come. So we'll be following along closely with that. Last bit here, Flyers, brought to you by our pals over at Tomahawk Shades, the best small batch eyewear in the game. From sunglasses to blue light glasses and everything in between with prescription lenses, they've got you covered. Download the Tomahawk Shades app in the App Store, Google Play Store, or go to TomahawkShades.com, fill up your cart, and use code USP for 25% off your order. Super effective way to support us. They've been rocking with us for 4 years now. They're right on Stevie's hometown there out on Long Island. So go to TomahawkShades.com. He's got them on right now. Or download the Tomahawk Shades app and use code USP for 25% off your order. Flyers get a big-time in regulation win on Saturday against the Boston Bruins at the Wells Fargo Center.
Fuck the Bruins. I love when New Yorkers and Philadelphians can come together just to shit on the Bostonians.
3-2 victory over the Bruins in regulation. Big 2 points there for the Fly guys. Tyson Forster buries it. Absolute snipe shot. Top corner. Against the Bruins with 90 seconds left in regulation, and the Flyers get a big time win. Unfortunately, dropped the back end of the homestand there, 4-1 to the Panthers. But to beat the Bruins, the Flyers had not beaten the Bruins, Steve, since 2021.
Yikes.
So that's a big lift off of the shoulders in terms of victories. I believe there was another team this year, our good pal Brooke Destra tweeted about it. And I want to pull up who it was, but to be able to beat a team that you haven't beat in nearly 3 years is just such a confidence boost for this young team that the Flyers are.
But the Jets trying to beat the Patriots at home.
Yes. Yeah. So before this week happened, the Flyers haven't beaten the Leafs since 2019 and the Bruins since 2021. Demons equal conquered.
Now, hold on. Is that at home or in general?
I think just in general.
Jesus, that's so bad. When's the last time they beat the Rangers? Because that's been a while too.
Yeah, good question.
Last time the Flyers have beaten? No, not the last time the Flyers made a Stanley Cup. No, that's a yikes. Beating the New York Rangers. I'm curious if this one too. They squeaked out a win, their first win in 3 years, 4-3 in a shootout, April 3rd, 2022. Jeez, they have bad history.
Yeah, I mean, it's been dark times for the Flyers over the past couple of years, but it's on the up and up right now. You got the Rangers on Tuesday, so that'll be a big one at Madison Square Garden.
Hopefully I'll be there.
Canadians on the road on Thursday, and then you round out the month of March at home against the Dogwater Chicago Blackhawks. So hopefully I would take 2-1 in these final three games of March. I think that's a good goal to aim for the Flyers, where they're sitting right now with 81 points on the season. No one saw this coming.
Yeah, and looking at their playoff opportunities, as of right now, with only 11 games to go, there is certainly an opportunity to go at least .500, beating Columbus, Montreal, give them twice, get Chicago. You're going to have a challenge, 2 games against the Rangers. The Islanders always present a challenge to the Flyers. Buffalo will be a compelling matchup. But if they can win 5 of these games, based on playoffstatus.com, if they only win 4 of the next 11, so go 36%, they'll finish at 40-33-9. They only have a 38% chance to make the playoffs. They have a 35% chance for the eighth, for the final wild card spot, less than a 1% chance to make the seventh. They're not going to make the seventh wild card spot. More likely than not, it's either you win the division or you win the final wild card slot. If they win 5 games, their percentage goes from 38% chance to not make it to only 11. So the odds only get higher if you can go 5-11, in which case, realistically, two games to Montreal, a third game to Chicago, a fourth game to Columbus. And if you can tweak out a win against either Washington in the final game of the year, New Jersey, Buffalo, even the Islanders, it is a pretty damn good shot. We'll see the Flyers in the playoffs.
Which the thing is, and Brooke tweeted about this too, and now that I'm looking at it, it's probably going to be that way because it's so Flyers. The Flyers and Capitals play each other the final game of the regular season. Postseason's probably going to hinge on that. The Capitals are only 2 points behind the Flyers in the standings in the Metropolitan right now and have two games in hand over the Flyers. The Capitals have 12 games remaining while the Flyers have 10. Mm-hmm. That game is going to be absolute, like, scenes in terms of potential for the Flyers to be making the playoffs.
I'm going to be honest with you, dude. If push comes to shove, I may have to be there with you to watch the Flyers possibly get into the playoffs in a final game against Washington. That would be a electric factory at the Wells Fargo.
The thing is, I would go to that game, but my track record at Flyers games is
so
horrific.
Bad.
I have never in my life seen the Flyers win a game in person.
So
I am 0-for.
So this is the here's a compelling thing to look at, right? Via StatMuse, the home road splits for the Flyers this year are actually pretty even. They've got a 55% winning percentage at home, 57% on the road. Again, the goals and goals against averages are pretty spot even. The one thing that actually stands out a lot is in home games, their power play is almost 10% more effective. Their PK is 7% more effective, and they average four more shots on goal, which leads to an average of almost a half a goal more at home. With the schedule remaining, four more home games, Chicago, New York, Jersey, and Washington, those final two games of the year. Again, two of those wins could very well come against a bad Chicago team and an Islanders team who has immensely struggled on the road this year. They cannot seem to get anything figured out when it comes to road games. And then again, you steal two games from Montreal on the road. Montreal's been a middle-of-the-road team the entirety of the year. You very well see a situation where five games will net the Flyers in the playoffs for the first time since 2019-20. Pretty damn cool.
And you have the Sabres on the road who are middle of the pack, not that great, and the exactly. Blue Jackets who are the worst team in the Metropolitan. Very winnable games. You just have to approach it in a sense of you can't take those teams lightly.
But also look at it from this sense. The Flyers also have the caveat here, which actually helps them out a lot, is you don't need to necessarily go 5-11. You can win only four games. If one of those games goes to OT, and this is the big point here, the Canadiens, the Jackets, and the Islanders are tied for the league lead in overtime games this year. Very much could see multiple overtime matchups, at the very least getting a point out of those games, which goes a very long way. You don't understand how important a tie can be in the grand scheme. Whether or not you win or lose, the fact that you can at least earn the point is what matters the most.
And the interesting part, too, I know you brought up the 2019-2020 season. That was the bubble where things were weird with the hockey playoffs and the Flyers ended up being the one seed because of the top four, like, round-robin tournament that they did
exactly.
In the bubble. Last normal playoff appearance for the Flyers was the 2017-2018 season because the Flyers went the entire 2010. Steve, I don't know if you know this fact. Fun little hockey trivia for you. The Flyers are the first team in NHL history to go an entire decade of flip-flopping, making the playoffs, missing the playoffs every yep. other year.
They're also the longest playoff drought, the longest Stanley Cup drought?
Probably, if not, there's one other team in front of them. Flyers haven't won since the 70s.
Talk about compelling, right? Now look,
the Leafs are the longest.
You're right. Those sorry sacks of shit down in Toronto. But you know what? Look, at the end of the day, to be able to see the Flyers make the playoffs and have some sort of sustained success, this is the best, most well-rounded coach team and probably the best team overall they've had in a long time, even when they made the playoffs in years past. We haven't seen a team as youthful and as strong as this specific Flyers team, and that's saying something for a team that's been struggling to even figure out anything for the last decade.
Yeah, so it's fun, and you know, we're on the brink of all four team fandoms at this company making the playoffs, which is going to be electric. We're gonna have
pretty
some
cool hockey
streams, and it's going to be a doozy of a time. So I'm looking forward to that for sure. And hopefully the Flyers can lock up this playoff spot sooner rather than later, so it doesn't come down to that final game against the Capitals.
But if it does, that'll probably be the best atmosphere in the Wells Fargo Center for a long time.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, the longest.
Because hockey fans are fucking psychotic.
Oh, yeah, and Flyers fans are psychotic in and of themselves. Exactly. The longest Stanley Cup droughts in the NHL, though, it's the Toronto Maple Leafs, 55 seasons. The Buffalo Sabres are 52 seasons. The Vancouver Canucks are 52 seasons. And those two teams have never won a Stanley Cup. Yep. The Flyers at 47 seasons. And then the Arizona Coyotes are at 43 seasons. And they also have never won a Stanley Cup.
Make it all make sense, right?
So Flyers have the longest American drought in terms of teams that have won before. Because the Sabres have not won before, but we'll see how that all plays out. Make sure you guys are following us on the socials at Underground PHI, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Threads, Facebook.com/UndergroundSportsPHI, Twitch.tv/UndergroundSportsPHI. DM us those dead brackets so you have an opportunity to get your hands on some dead threads from our pals over at Dead Threads. Of course, subscribe to the podcast feed. Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast in audio form, leave a 5-star rating and review. It goes a long way for helping this show continue to grow, helps more people find all of the shows on our network as a whole. Follow Steve on the socials at Real Steve McAvoy. Follow me at KBIZZL311 on Twitter and KBIZZLE11 on Instagram and Threads. Subscribe to the Underground Sports Philadelphia YouTube channel, youtube.com/@UndergroundSportsPhiladelphia. Let's get to 1,000 subscribers. Let's make that. We are 250 away. 250 of you out there probably tune in, watch our clips, watch live streams and aren't subscribed. Subscribe. You get to see my face all the time, Steve's face all the time, Patty Pitts, DJ, Matt, Dom, Dylan, Christian, Casey and Owen, Ben, the whole nine yards. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/@UndergroundSportsPhiladelphia. Get your merch at phiapparel.co and use code underground for 10% off your order. And of course, this show is presented by the City of Vineland. And whether you're a company looking to expand, relocate, or you're a new business startup, selecting the right location is critical to your success. Vineland, New Jersey offers both an affordable business location and an excellent quality of life. The city's economic development department is a one-stop source for moving your project through the development and approval process, and their goal is to make this process as smooth as possible and to provide the fastest turnaround times in the region. If you're considering potential locations for your operation, contact the Vineland Economic Development Team at 856-794-4100. That's 856-794-4100. Vineland, New Jersey, where it's always growing season. And big thank you to Security 21 Security Systems and Paul J. Gillespie Incorporated for their continued support of this podcast. It's been episode number 623 of Underground Sports Philadelphia. Shout out to Steve's mom. Presented by the City of Vineland. For Stevie Mac, I'm KB. We'll catch you guys next time. Be sure to follow along for everything from Citizens Bank Park if you're listening to this on Monday. And we'll catch you guys next time. Peace.